that if the plan doesn't make sense on the back of a paper napkin, it's probably too complex as well, too. Even when it comes to automation today, everybody wants to think that AI is here and AI assisted bots are here and you can automate everything and you can.
Recording. This is another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. My guest today is Matthew Hunt from Automation Wolf. So could you have a better name of a company for a guest to be on the Automate and Grow podcast? Thank you, Matthew. Do you prefer Matt or Matthew, by the way?
You know, both are good. What ends up happening is formally people meet me as Matthew, and as we become closer, people always default to Matt. We always want to shorten our names, right?
Yeah, exactly. People call me Mike. I'm like, I don't even answer, apparently. Like, oh, you mean me?
Well, if my name was Mike, that would be really bad with the last name like Hunt.
Yes. Well, first of all, thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks. It's great for being here. Thank you for having me.
So we were kind of talking before for quite a while. We're both Canadian. We have some common background there. You're in Toronto, and you started Automation Wolf after having an agency. So I guess start off with, like, what is Automation Wolf and who do you guys help and what kind of problems do you solve?
Yeah, sure. So Automation Wolf is essentially an agency for an agency. So a lot of agencies, and I know because I owned one, or two of them actually, they fall under the umbrella of the cobbler's kids goes with no shoe. So they're so busy doing marketing for everybody else, they never quite get around to either working on their marketing, or for some reason, when you have to do your own marketing as a marketing agency, you're just terrible at doing your own. And eventually hiring someone to come in and do that for you is key. And so what I do a lot of the time is, the reason why automation is in there is I try to automate as much of it as possible, or find as much leverage as possible for these agencies, because they usually have very small teams, or they, you know, it's usually the owner who's still doing a lot of the selling, and therefore their biggest problem is the lack of time. And so I either need to automate it, because what ends up happening is if they might do some prospecting or some marketing or some sort of activity period, and then they get some clients and they get busy fulfilling those clients or running their company, that that process of marketing and prospecting stops. And so they go through this feast and famine process. So automating it prevents that from happening. And if it doesn't involve humans, it's one less person to manage. Because when I had SDRs and BDRs, my biggest pain point was actually managing them. Not the cost for them, not that they weren't profitable, not that there wasn't ROI. It was like, shit, here's more people I got to look after. And then you got to hire a manager to manage managers, right? I mean, it just becomes so ridiculous.
Well, I think that, you know, we've seen obviously the last 10 years, a lot of tools come out.
Sure.
And the process of finding people that look like your customers and then selling to them is still kind of voodoo-y, it feels like. Mm-hmm. So where have you found success that's kind of eliminated that voodoo, maybe? Because it kind of sounds like what you're talking about is the complexity of sales, the complexity of lead generation.
Totally. Yeah. So simplifying things is so important. I mean, I think the most important word in any business owner's vocabulary should be the word delete. And so if there's anything and anything you can delete, you should delete it. And if it doesn't fit on, you know, that if the plan doesn't make sense on the back of a paper napkin, it's probably too complex as well, too. Even when it comes to automation today, everybody wants to think that AI is here and AI assisted bots are here and you can automate everything and you can have these, what are those things you call, like, that you know, that was like at the beginning of Back to the Future and stuff, where, you know, this thing hits this thing. There's something. The Goldberg machines.
What are those?
Goldberg machains, I think they're called, or something.
The chain reaction.
The chain reaction. You know, everyone wants to create these super complex funnels and all this like firing of automation and remove all it, but it's so ridiculous. It doesn't work, right? The reality is, you know. And I know we've all heard this before, but we only buy from people that we know that we like, and that we trust. And the higher the ticket price the item is, the more important that is. Like, we really don't care about the features or whether one product is better or not, and even what the price is. We're really usually just buying on that trust factor. But the challenge is, so many people try to do their selling before they have any kind of trust, and that's the mistake. And so really there's two different types of selling and marketing, or pre-selling and marketing, for a lot of agencies. They either look at it as like, hey, we need to do inbound marketing, which is just publishing lots of valuable content out there, putting your best information out there in all different forms. You might choose Instagram, some might choose Facebook ads, others YouTube, some have podcasts, some people do blogs, some people, you know, do whatever. Even inbound can be done offline. This could be a meetup, a conference, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Is one way to, that's kind of one camp. And then there's the other camp that's more like, you know, the camp that probably every SaaS company is subscribed to at some point, which is outbound, or sometimes known as account-based marketing, ABM, or something like that, right? And they all read the book, Aaron Ross's book, Predictable Revenue.
Oh, of course. Go, yeah, totally.
They go, oh, we need to cold email. we need to eat cold email everybody, right? And get them into demos, basically, right? And there's this whole process about doing it. And many, many companies have actually built very successful B2B SaaS companies doing that model, which is great, or a combination of the two, which would be more account-based marketing. But when you just boil it all down and simplify it to its sort of first principles, right? What all of it is really trying to do at the end of the day is get in front of a controlled environment of people, whoever your ideal customer profile is, your ICPs, your ideal client or avatar, whatever the hell you want to call it, doesn't matter. Yep. And they're trying to create a controlled way to build trust.
Right. Totally.
And then through that trust, you know, that's when the sale takes place, assuming that there's some pain. So here's what I learned, though, of why both don't work and what you need to do. So inbound doesn't really work for a lot of people because, shit, it's a lot of work. And there's a lot of steps and a lot of things to do, you know? Like, if you think about it, taking someone cold, like, hey, they read your blog post and then maybe you pixeled them, right? So then they see a retargeting ad, and then maybe you got them to download this white paper or join your webinar. And then all of a sudden you have them in your email nurturing thing, and you're nurturing them. But it takes so many steps to get them even to what you call that sales qualified lead stage, beyond the marketing qualified lead stage. There's so many touches. There's so much work to be done there. Most people don't have the time to do all that. So what I usually recommend is, hey, you start with outbound, because most B2B businesses know what their ideal client looks like and where they live, right? They're not invisible, right? They're very visible. And there's so many tools today that it's pretty easy to find who these individuals are and their contact information, or at least their LinkedIn profile, right? You may or may not be able to find their email, but a lot of times you can find their phone number, their mailing address. I mean, it's all on the web, or you can reverse engineer it quite easily once you find one of them, because they all follow the same formula at the end of the day.
Yeah, totally.
Creating email address. But the problem with outbound is that you do that and you go, okay, it's controlled, but then most people go, you're a stranger.
Right. Stranger danger.
Stranger danger. Yep. Yeah. So what do you need to do to cross that bridge? So what I try to tell people to do is use two simple strategies that work pretty much online or offline, depending on which one's better for you. And sometimes one is better than the other, depending on who it is that you're targeting. And I'll give more specific examples in a minute, but you want to offer community to these people. The reason why you do that is it's really soft. And so it kind of skates through the sniff test for a lot of people when they get a cold email, where they just go to the spam box or delete or reply back, get off my list, unsubscribe me, and all this other stuff, right? Because it's something that most people want. And if you set it up right with the right kind of community offer, well, birds of a feather want to flock together, and it's something that's evergreen, that's happened forever. And there's something really special about that. Now, the trick is, you can't make it any old community. It actually has to be positioned as a private community, Okay. Because so if it's not private, then it's not special and unique enough. Okay. It doesn't matter where it is, whether it's Facebook or LinkedIn or Slack or your own software like Mighty Networks, or even if you do it offline in like a private meetup, or, you know, if you're doing a private Zoom call that's just private for a group, or, you know, an email, like, honestly, it doesn't matter how you set it. It just needs to be private. And it works the same reason why people pay thousands and thousands of dollars to go rub elbows with the rich and famous, like going hang out with Richard Brunson on Necker Island. Or if you pay attention really to some other people who've done this really well, they've built some incredible B2B businesses. If you follow, a person that follows Jason Gaynard with Mastermind Talks or Community Made, or you can look at Joe Polish and the Genius Network, right? And these guys, if they basically know everybody, right? And they've done this in a very short amount of time, and they've done it through what's called community, or you can look, and Joe Polish is, you know, podcasting partner as well, too, strategic coach, right? There's another Dan great Sullivan, example. Right? Yeah, that's right, Dan Sullivan. Yeah. Or you can look
at 10X podcast, I think.
That's right. Cameron Harold's pulled the same hat out of the rabbit with the Kua Alliance, right? I mean, and if you just keep going and you really start paying attention, all these guys, they're creating private communities is the offer, right? You're getting an invite to that. And why that works better than any other offer for even the owner who's running it is a community actually leverages what's called the network effect, okay? And the network effect is any system that gets better the more people you add to it. So when you look at the 80-20 rule, a good community is actually peer-driven. So the community is creating 80% of the content, you're creating 20% of it, or you're initiating the conversations. That's your only goal as the host of the community. And when you end up being the host of the community, you can also do these like sort of spotlight interviews. And this hosting of it, you know, it's kind of like, it follows the, what I say is it follows like the Fibonacci sequence, you know? So like, yeah, that's the way it grows. Like it, at first it's not that exciting because it's like, you know, 0 + 1 = 1 and then 1 + 1 = 2. And all of a sudden it's 2 + 1 = 3, but it follows that kind of the compound interest thing, that it gets more exciting with time, but it actually is more like a spiral at the end of the day. And if you think of it as this Fibonacci sequence is really a universal law. It exists in everything. It's in plants, it's in black holes, it's in storms. Like you think of a hurricane, there's all this activity happening in the hurricane, but there's always the eye of the storm. Well, what ends up happening is you become the eye of the storm, because as you are hosting things and you're interviewing people, let's say you end up kind of doing what Oprah does or Tim Ferriss does. Basically there's you as the host, and then there's expert that you brought into the community of the feature. And then there's you again, and then there's the next expert, and there's you, and there's the next expert, and there's you, and there's the next expert. Well, nobody remembers all the experts. They only remember you as the anchor, right? And what ends up happening, what's so great is if you bring in the experts, is they transfer all their expertise to you. Right. So you could literally don't need to know anything. Like if you really think about it, what is Oprah or Tim Ferriss an expert of?
I mean, nothing. Tim Ferriss obviously is an expert in a lot of things, but
well, but
he's like a machine.
Well, really,
he's an experimenter, but that's a little different. But you're right. Yeah. He is the source of really interesting people. Like, how else do I hear Kevin Rose?
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's like his sphere of influence. He touches so many crazy startups. Like, you know, it was interesting. I don't know if like Uber is an example where he's a big Uber, or he's, you know, for him, it's big.
Yeah.
Because that's someone he advised early on. Right. So, to your point, he's that epicenter that everyone, it's like the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon or the 6 degrees of Tim Ferriss, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Oprah too.
Yeah. And basically, like, you know, what ends up happening is a couple things happen. So one, if you look at Tim Ferriss actually, he never made any of his own content. He just distilled other people's content expertise into a book.
Even the 4-hour work week?
Except for the 4-hour work
week. And the 4-hour body, and because he's a pretty big experimenter, right? But
yeah, go and look
at right, all the tribe other, of mentors all, is basically everybody else's content, right?
It's everybody else's content. He's just he's curating everything else. So what you have to really actually think of yourself instead is think of yourself as a talent scout. Not stop trying to be the expert. Instead, be a talent scout. It's easier. There's less friction. You don't have, so here's all these agency owners and other people in B2B businesses. They're running around with their heads cut off with tons and tons of people and expenses, when instead it's so easy to reach out to really smart people and spotlight them, and they will create your content for you. And then what you do as the host is you ask for your audience and your community what they want to learn, so they can teach them what to look for and what to look out for. And not only do they transfer all their brand equity to you, right? All their expertise to you. So they actually, I call it OPA. So everyone knows what OPM is. It's other people's money. But I think what's more valuable today in 2020 and beyond is OPA, which stands for two things: other people's authority and other people's audiences.
I love it.
So you get to transfer that. And then what ends up happening is you build so much goodwill and trust equity. And this is what you want. Not you don't want equity in a bank. You want trust equity in the bank, so that when you decide to make a withdrawal, you can literally have a license to print money. And I'll give you an example. Let's say we take Oprah. She's not really been on the circuit for a long time now, but this is all she did: interview really interesting people, teach her audience what to look for and what to look out for. At the end of it, she built so much trust equity. Not only is she worth a fortune, but today, if she found a company that was totally struggling because of COVID-19 or something like that, right? For whatever reason, it was struggling. It doesn't matter. They're barely starting. She goes and gets on Twitter and goes, "Oh, I really love this company. They're really amazing. They're barely surviving. I'd be great if you could support them." Well, with that one tweet, overnight, they're going to go from surviving to thriving. One person, right? That's the power of building a community, being a talent scout, and interviewing other interesting, curating people, like, right? So the byproduct is you don't need to create your own content anymore. You get it for free. You know, two, you get all the expertise. And then three, you earn all the trust. So even if you suck at sales at the end of the day, whenever you want to make a withdrawal, it doesn't matter what you sell, you're able to make money. So what I'm trying to teach people today now is, like, after I've owned a couple of businesses, here's what I've learned: businesses and services come and go. They do. And this is what happened to me. I sold my last business and my shares of my company in 2018 to my partner. And I ended up with, like, yes, getting a whack of money, but I had nothing because I didn't build a community like that was owned by me and my personal brand. But instead, what I learned is, like, oh, I want to live in B2B. Today I'm selling this thing, but tomorrow I might sell something different or whatever. What I really need is the community, and I need the trust with that community. So what's really easy is find out who they are, build a list of who it is, do cold outreach to them in any way you want. It could be lumpy mail, could be the phone, could be LinkedIn, could be email. Doesn't matter. Choose your poison, all three, all four, whatever. Get them into your community. Use your inbound interview strategy so that you can sell to them technically at a one-to-many level. So you have a leverage there again, right? They get to know, like, and trust you. And then every once in a while, make an offer, make a little withdrawal, you know? And what's great is people then end up clamoring to you. They end up filling out your applications. Right? They end up auditioning for you, because it's the other way around. Now you're a hot commodity, right? You're not debating over price anymore. You don't need to do any kind of any of this, because you're not short on leads or any of this stuff. It creates a predictable, easy way that you can just rinse and repeat and do these fun activities, because they're fun. Yeah, it's enjoyable. Right. As opposed to trying to prospect people and, like, convince them to do a demo or try to sell them your thing.
And you have, and to you have all this commission where they have transactional problems, right?
Yeah,
they're like, exactly. Hey, I have this problem. I'm searching for it. Well, I don't know that if I'm just outbounding to you. I'm, like, spraying and praying, which it makes a lot of sense. Like, you retain your credibility, you're saying, and it's not that you're just reaching out to them for the sake of, trying to eventually sell them. It's like, no, I'm legitimately focused, you're saying. I think this is what I heard from you. Let's focus on a particular role or vertical so that we're niche and there's exclusivity, and become, kind of the epicenter of that community and build the community around it.
Totally.
And when you're ready to make an offer, then you have people that, you've already invested in raising their profile.
Yep. I think even this is the first step before you even build a company. So the people are really smart at this now. They build a community and trust this way with a group of people, and then they ask them what they want to buy, and then they sell it to them. So this is kind of how I developed this version of the company, because when I didn't know what to do and I couldn't sell inbound marketing services anymore, digital marketing services anymore, because I sold my shares for 2 years, I asked people. I knew I wanted to live in B2B once I figured that out. Like, where's that place I could live for a while, you know, the next decade, 20 years or a lifetime, right? Like just broad. And I was like, oh, B2Bs, that's my peeps. Those are my people. Then I just asked them, what do you want to buy? Right. And then they told me it was leads. So I was like, oh, okay, I got to find a way to give them leads. That's what they want. Right? So they'll tell you, which is really amazing, right? You don't need to guess what to build. It's just ask them. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
So it's funny because if someone heard Automation Wolf, they wouldn't understand. And I think people, to your point, even on with Automate and Grow, they either get intimidated by or obsessed with the parts of a system.
Yeah.
What I'm hearing from you is, listen, people still are important. You just have to have the right people. So you still have to start with that audience, that ideal client. And then once you create a way for them to connect with each other and you being the center of that, it scales. And it scales because you have a repeatable person that you're targeting and a repeatable call to action.
That's right. Yeah. And it's very simple because at the end of the day, you've automated the process of inviting them to your community because you'll do it with software, right? Or software and VAs, really low cost. and it's a really easy offer for people to say yes to. And then once they're in the community, you're just going to use an interview strategy to interview the people they aspire to be like so that you can borrow their brand, right? Up your influence through it. And two, you have the lead domino to creating all your other content. When you interview them and it's on video, it creates all your snackable content. It creates your podcast. It creates your YouTube channel. You can transcribe it into a blog. You know what I mean? Like on and on and on and on. And sometimes even the people you interview turn into your clients. Like once they find out what it is that you do, because at the end of it, they're like, hey, what do you do, Michael? And then you're going to tell them, I do this automation thing. And then they're like, oh, actually, I think I might need some help with that. And you just listen to them. We like people who listen to us. And essentially, an interview is a discovery call. So that's a nice byproduct. I don't think you should go in with the mindset that that's the case, because if you do, people will smell that commission breath. And
you won't be authentic.
Yeah, you won't be authentic. You should go in with just the fact of giving your community. And if you do these things, you end up capitalizing on other universal laws, like, you know, Simon Sinek's universal law of like, start with why. We don't buy what you do, we buy why you do it. So this is a part of that mission, right? So you need to get your mission, your Cameron Harrell's vivid vision down and make sure it's about something bigger than you. The byproduct is you end up making sales or creating companies or SaaS products or other things. Like I always tell people, I know you want leads and sales, but really what you need to focus on is building community and building trust. The byproduct is leads and sales. The byproduct is services and companies and businesses that are successful. So you got to focus on the right things, but it's a bit of a mindset shift, right?
Totally. And I think that, you know, we talked about this before, which is, you know, I sometimes get indulgent because I meet really interesting people and through the podcast. So I learn about what they're working on and, you know, how they're impacting things. And to me, I think that the trick for people, not the trick, but the challenge might be then how do you translate that into business in a repeatable way? But it sounds like that's what, you know, you've figured out, which is at some point it's okay to make an offer.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of sneaky things that I do when people come in. Of course, the devil's in the details. So like even one of the little things that I do that produces sales right away is when they get invited to the community, we automate the process of even getting them to start participating, but even the automating the process of doing a 10-minute welcome call. And I can't even tell you how, because it's a personal connection. Like remember belly to belly relationships are always the strongest. Of course, like right now with COVID-19, it's hard to be belly to belly, but even with the world of community being digital, people forget to do some things that don't necessarily scale, but it does, because what they don't realize is they do a 10-minute welcome call. Let's say they're getting 50 new members to their community per month type thing. Really simple.
Small thing.
Well, half of them will get on a phone call with you. And if you just ask them what they want in the community, one is to get, and ask them some questions. One is it first tells you what to publish so you don't have to guess. Two, it becomes like, you know, client research. This is the number one thing that people always have is like mind-blowing information, is they're always selling something that their customer doesn't really want, right? So here product you can find out what the, yeah, product fit. So yeah. Forces that. And then two, you get more commitment to your community because they have a face and someone they connected to. And the last one, the fourth one is a lot of times they ask you, like, what do you do? Why do you have this community? And that gives you your opportunity to do your elevator pitch, at which point they'll be like, hey, I think I need that. And you'll schedule a second call, which leads into sales right away without it being sleazy or slimy, et cetera. So there's ways to fast track the sales and automate it without it being that way. But there's little, these are just little tactics, right? What's more important is that people actually understand the broad strokes and the strategy and the universal laws of why it works, and get the right mindset. And then you can work on all the little tiny tactical things, you know, which is, that's, you know, it's the last thing you should be working on. People are way too much into tactics these days.
Yeah. But I think I love, what I like about what you're saying is that number one, you're bridging that gap between just being benevolent. And there's a logical path for someone, if they fit, to follow, yeah, to, you know, talk to you about problems they have and that you can solve. And if not, they're still part of, you know, a valuable community that you've built. So you still have future opportunity and they can work, connect with each other. So you are delivering a good to everybody, which is awesome.
That's right. Yeah. Like a lot of times, like the word I like to use, even with the outreach beyond community is I have a community where we collaborate and we send each other clients or we refer each other or we brainstorm on solving problems. Because the root of it is that's really what people want is they want to collaborate with people who look and feel and seem like them, right? Like chiropractors want to collaborate with other chiropractors. They're alone in their role as a chiropractor or a lawyer or a CMO or a CTO. Like a lot of times there's only one CTO in a company.
Right.
Man, they would love to just get together and break bread with other CTOs once a month. Like it just gives them inspiration. And if you're the center around that, and you do something that facilitates and helps CTOs, whether it's be software or something else, then man, you have a much better chance at selling it being like in the inner circle, right? Than being on the outer circle.
That's
so
amazing.
Give them what they want, right?
So Matt, I want to be conscious of your time. I know that we could talk a long time about this, but you probably have other stuff that you got going on. So first, yeah,
I'm taking the kids to the pool. That's what's going on.
That's
next.
Important. All right. Well, we don't want to deprive the kids. So, I guess the first thing, thank you for being on, and sharing your process. How do people get in touch with you?
Sure. So two ways that I'm responsive. One is if you go to automationwolf.com, there's nothing you can do there, but watch a video and fill out a form on purpose. That's one way. There's nothing else to see there. I have no intention of building any more content anytime in the near future either, because that's work and I'm lazy. And I don't need to, because I have a community. the second thing is you can also reach me on LinkedIn. LinkedIn's the other place that I'm semi active, but if you reach to me on any of the other social media platforms, I have a profile, but I'm not checking it.
No problem. All right. So LinkedIn and then obviously automationwolf.com.
Yep.
I'll wrap with a couple things. First of all, I think it's Jim Rohn that says you are the sum of the five people you spend the most time with.
Yeah.
So who do you, Matt, spend the most time with?
Currently, obviously it would be my family. But outside of that, it's probably the few select clients that I work with, which I really like consider our friends. So I have three products. There's really like a do-it-yourself and done-with-you program, which is scalable, and a lot of people can go into that. But when I have a done-for-you client, I'm very particular about who I bring on, and I would say that they're really my inner circle. You know, we're buddies, and I like to work with people who love working with me, and I love working with them, and we just do awesome deep work, right? So I'd say I hang out a lot with them. But outside of that, books and podcasts have been my best friends for a long time and where I get most of my best ideas from. And so I'm so grateful that there's so many giants out there that are so willing to share their best information. And if they weren't doing that over the last, you know, 15 years, as I discovered entrepreneurship, I just wouldn't be as far as I am today. And I'm just so grateful for that.
I love it. I got to start asking people this one day, which is, what are you reading? I think, you know, I was thinking about that the other day, because it's always interesting to see what people are reading. So normally I would ask you how you're changing the world.
Yeah. I mean,
there's a question there somewhere.
Yeah. I, if you want me to answer it, the answer is I don't really believe that I am. Okay. Nor really any of us are. I think that our life is very, very short, and we're not even a speck of sand in the grand scheme of things. If you really look at the age of the earth and the universe, I think the impact that we drive is purely for our ego. And if we really removed ourselves from it, looked at it, it's pretty meaningless. So I'm at peace with that and just going to enjoy
a very Sartre answer.
Just enjoy the fun along the way. I mean, as far as I know, we got one life. It's not a dress rehearsal. Fucking have a little bit of fun, you know?
Like it. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I do not disagree with that. Well, the final thing that I will ask, a couple things actually too. I'm going to add one more in.
Sure.
People know that I've been writing my second book, which is called Form Your Own Pack. And cool. I think a lot of the ideas that you're sharing with me around community are really interesting, because part of that is Founders Pack. And I've been kind of trying to get off of my, I don't know how to put it, but get myself into producing more content and building that community. So I'd like to invite you to Founders Pack, but also maybe we can talk about having some of your ideas shared in the book if you're interested.
Cool. Sounds great. Of course. Who would say no?
I don't know. We'll find out. No one said no yet, but I haven't.
Only a fool. Only a fool.
Okay. So the final thing is that when we have interesting people on the podcast, we like you to nominate other interesting people. We usually talk to experts or entrepreneurs. So who would you, Matt, like to nominate as a future guest of Automate and Grow?
If you haven't interviewed Mikkel Dia yet from Funnelytics, I think he'd be a great person for you to interview.
Oh, yeah. Funnelytics. Yeah. So this is a tool that you can use to, it's basically like almost like a mind map or a flow chart, right? And then you can turn it into a funnel. Is that the right product that I'm thinking?
Yeah. So it's really two tools at the end of the day. So one is a mapping tool that's really become a sales aid for a lot of agencies to sell funnels. But the back end of it is a legit analytics tool where it helps you, it stitches all together the problems with attribution so that you can actually find out what's working and what's not working with your funnels. And it's perfect for people who are really super crazy about spending a lot of media spend and doing a lot of funnel type work online. So
it's, oh, that's awesome. I've actually used that tool in the past and I really like it. So it's Mikkel Dia, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I can give an introduction for you. He's a friend and a client, like I said,
who
follows the strategy, and he's super, super lickety smart. I mean, really smart guy. Yeah.
Okay. Mikkel Dia, you have been nominated as a future guest. We appreciate that nomination and look for the introduction. Matt, I want to thank you for your time today and all your insight. Come back anytime and I will follow up with you. Maybe we can figure out how we can do a little bit of an interview and include it in the book.
Sounds awesome. Thanks, Michael.
No problem. This has been another episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. We will see you on a future episode, hopefully with Mikkel. Hopefully I'm saying his name right. Mikkel
Dia,
Funnelytics. Yep. We'll tune in another episode. Thank you.